Hey everyone, welcome back to But Why the Podcast, the podcast where we talk about the things in pop culture that people say matter, and we ask the question, but why though? I just wanted to let you know that if you want more content, we do have extra stuff on Patreon, so head on over to patreon.com/butwhythoughpc. Today marks our 45th episode, and for our 50th, we're planning on doing a very special episode where you, the listener, gets to ask us anything. So send in your questions, send them to our email, info@butwhythoughpodcast.com. You can send them to us on Twitter @butwhythoughpc, as well as our Facebook page, facebook.com/butwhythoughpc. And for every question that's submitted, your name will be going into a random drawing to win a free little gift box with some goodies inside it, a t-shirt, and some other things that I have in mind. We will be answering 10 each and then 10 as a group. So make them great. Send them our way. And guys, have any requests?
Do not send Kate 50 questions and send us nothing, or I'm not going to show up.
Well, I can like replace your name. Like put your name in my
I'm
name.
I'm going to put a cardboard figure of myself there for that episode.
Oh, man. No, I don't have any. Just send us good ones. We'll talk about it.
This week, we're continuing the Star Wars theme by talking about the prequel trilogy. That means episode 1, episode 2, episode 3. As always, I'm your host, Kate, and I'm here with Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
And Matt.
Hello.
That was weird.
Why did you say my name like that?
I don't know. I think I yelled into the mic. Anyway, and for this episode, the Jedi and or Sith Master who will be leading it will be Adrian. So Adrian, do you want to take us in?
Yeah. Just a caveat, disclaimer. I don't know the word. I'm sick again today. So if I sound like Darth Sidious from Revenge of the Sith after Mace Windu lightnings him up, that's why. But I'm excited. I watched all three movies today for the prequel trilogy. So I'm hype and we're going to get through it. As we always do, we're going to start off with a quick intro question. Just because the prequels are so, you know...
Divisive.
And some people love them. Most people hate them. We're just going to get it all off on the record right before we start. So my question for you guys is, do you like the prequels? We'll go with Matt first.
One, I think this is more of a fan base problem than an actual movie problem. As far as decisiveness. But as far as the prequels go, I really do not like The Phantom Menace, but the other two I don't mind.
Yeah, I think going off of that, I struggle rewatching The Phantom Menace because there are times where I go through and watch everything. I was a very strong prequel hater, like extremely strong. I believe some of the first conversations that I had with you, Adrian, were talking about these things.
Yep.
And strongly disagreeing about them. But I will say I've kind of come to appreciate them for what they do, and I've kind of learned to look past the writing in some parts and actually look at the story that's being told overall. So I kind of have a better appreciation for them. I don't like The Phantom Menace, and I don't have a supreme hate anymore. Except for The Phantom Menace, actually. I hate Kid Anakin so much.
Oh, good. For me, I just don't not like the prequels. Like, I've never been a hater of them, like, at all. As I've gotten older, I think I've seen the problems. Like, I understand why people do not like them. I don't understand why it gets hate. I think hate is, like... I reserve that for Batman v Superman, Martha scene. Like, reserve... That's hate for me. I like them some more than others. Like, I prefer to watch Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith over The Phantom Menace, but I won't not watch The Phantom Menace when I do my rewatches every year. I mean, I even like Revenge of the Sith more than I like Return of the Jedi, for being completely honest. Especially after I just watched it right now. Like, it's, that movie deserves way more credit than it gets for its storytelling, and there's no Ewoks in it, so that's a big plus for me.
Don't be hating on Ewoks.
Oh, I hate Ewoks. Like, I don't hate Ewoks. I just dislike the choice of Ewoks.
Yep, no.
Compared to other stuff. Just because Star Wars is just so widely popular, and I feel like our fans who are listening to this episode more or less know the history or, like, you know, the timeline of the creation of the movies that they love. We're not going to go too in-depth in, like, the production history of it, just because we'll be here forever, because it's, like, years of George Lucas hating Star Wars, and then, you know, him offering it to Spielberg, and Spielberg being like, no, and it's just a whole mess. So we're going to keep it very brief and just kind of go over what kind of led to the prequels being made, and then we'll just jump right into the but why those, because I think that's why people are here to listen, to know why we hate or love certain aspects of this prequel trilogy. So in the 1980s, George Lucas actually had no desire to complete his 6-movie vision that he had when he first made the original trilogy. He even canceled it and was just completely done with it. But thanks to the early 90s, and we've talked about this in our Star Wars books episode, the Star Wars universe fandom basically kind of resurged the popularity of Star Wars with the expanded universe. So the comic books, the Thrawn trilogy, things like that. So we see a huge popularity brought back to Star Wars in the early 90s. And because of this, Lucas saw that there was still a large audience for his idea for a prequel trilogy. And with the development of special effects that were going on in the early 90s, he saw an opportunity to kind of bring back his vision that he had for his 6 movie.
Or them dollar signs?
Probably both. I mean, he thought he had 6 movies in his head when he made the first movie. And really, to be honest, like, Star Wars wasn't a success until the second movie anyway. So I think it's a little bit both. I mean, this isn't, you know, Rogue Run money grab for math.
No, but the way you explained it, I was like, oh, this totally sounds like a money grab. Like, I hated this thing forever, and then it became popular, and now it's, let's start making some movies again.
I don't know if he hated it. I think he was just, like, over, like, just the... Because he was, like, young when he made Star Wars.
He was worn out on it, because it's kind of, like, pigeonholing you. I would think, like, if you're a creator, like, you may have created one of the best and one of the most well-known and most loved, like, sci-fi franchises, but that kind of makes it so that's all you can do.
Yeah, like, and he did it at such a young age. Like, I mean, young age relatively in terms of, like, directing, that he was probably just overwhelmed with all the popularity, despite the dollar signs. Like, if it was a dollar sign thing, so he would have just probably just went right into making the 3 movies right away in my head. But anyway, he decides to do it, and he starts writing the new trilogy in 94. And, you know, much of what we talked about before, he took the screenplay that he basically made in 1976, which kind of had a just a very, like, brief main story back, like, main points to this new trilogy. So it wasn't totally fleshed out. I think it was only like a 15-page outline of the entire story. So he kind of started writing it just from the main points that he had back in the 70s. So with obviously a bigger budget, with Star Wars being more popular and the advances in digital effects, Lucas wanted to make a more grander, on a more epic scale, Star Wars, which is what he always wanted Star Wars to be. But, you know, back in the 70s and being a new franchise, he just didn't have all of the resources to make the movie. Like, if you go back and look at any of the special edition stuff or, like, any of the behind-the-scenes stuff for the original trilogy, like, that movie almost didn't... Like, those movies almost didn't get made because he almost ran out of money. So with this new budget, he was able to kind of do a lot more with it. And that's good and bad because he puts a lot into that first movie, The Phantom Menace. Basically had 5 story ongoing points, ongoing plots in that movie. So the big, like, main themes in this movie is Palpatine's, you know, starting his plan to become Chancellor. This Trade Federation's attack on Naboo, which puts in political maneuvering. And then you have the Jedi getting involved in, you know, this dispute, which doesn't happen, which kind of sets up things for the Clone Wars. And then you have Anakin starting his journey to become a Jedi, and then the fall, and then you have the rise of the Sith Lord. It's kind of like all in that first movie, which...
When you write it out like that, that's kind of a, that's a cluster of
it's a lot of
things.
Yeah, it's a lot. And having just rewatched them today, it's that first movie is kind of hard to get through, just because, not because like things are bad in it necessarily, it's just there's just way too much in it, and it just takes away from the other things in the movie. So there's a lot of bouncing around. And because of all of this, really, to be honest, The Phantom Menace gets a mixed critical response from fans and from critics alike. And it really like was so bad that Lucas almost didn't come back to write the second movie, Attack of the Clones. And that kind of leads to some of the problems in Attack of the Clones, to be honest, because just 3 months before principal photography, Lucas completed his rough draft of episode 2, and then continued to work on that rough draft. And then like during that time period, so he's kind of like rushing out a script and a draft of the movie, like while some of like the things that should be already done, like photography is going on, but he's still working on the script for the movie, which doesn't lead to good things. So because of this, again, we kind of get like a very mixed response as well for the Attack of the Clones. I think Attack of the Clones does substantially worse than The Phantom Menace. I imagine a lot of this is because people weren't happy with the first movie, and because it just didn't have like that rewatchability where people are going back to see it multiple times over and over again. This is all kind of like anecdotal experience, because I didn't see The Phantom Menace in theaters. I saw Attack of the Clones in theaters, and I saw Revenge of the Sith in theaters. So I don't remember I can't speak to the response directly from The Phantom Menace, but obviously it was bad enough where, Attack of the Clones made like $400 million less or so than The Phantom Menace.
My dad took me to go see The Phantom Menace when it first came out with my cousins, who are the ones that got me into Star Wars and the ones whose VHSs I ended up breaking by watching it so many times. And my dad did not take me to go see Attack of the Clones. And I had to watch it on a bootleg from the flea market. That was my first experience with Attack of the Clones. It's actually one of my favorite. It's my favorite out of the three, which is heresy, but
I saw Attack of the Clones in the theaters. And then I don't even remember how I saw The Phantom Menace. And then it probably didn't see, was it Revenge of the Sith, right?
Yeah. I will say this. I did see Revenge of the Sith, like, I think 3 times in theaters with, like, different groups of friends.
I didn't see that till like, 4 years after it came out.
Oh, wow.
I saw Revenge of the Sith midnight showing. It's, like, first, like, midnight showing that I distinctly remember as a kid.
Yeah.
And I loved it. So going on into the Revenge of the Sith. So because Lucas basically had to wrap everything up in Revenge of the Sith, he left out a lot of plot points from Attack of the Clones. He promised fans that he would explain the mystery behind things like Kamino and the Jedi Archives and things like that at a later date, but he never really got around to it until basically like the Clone Wars TV show. So a lot of like that stuff is left unresolved in Revenge of the Sith. He even like planned to have more tie-ins to the original trilogy, things like a 10-year-old Han Solo appearing on Kashyyyk during that battle, Palpatine revealing to Anakin that he and his master basically created him from midichlorians and thus being his father, and then just parallels to Luke and Vader from like The Empire Strikes Back and things like that. So more Vader then we just get in like that last like 10 minutes, but all that stuff doesn't make it into the movie, and we get the movie that we get for whatever reason those are. At the end of the day, The Phantom Menace comes out in 1999 and does very, very well. A little over $1 billion in the box office. Attack of the Clones comes out in 2002 and only makes, I say only. But like it's still like a substantial amount of money. $649.4 million in the box office, and Revenge of the Sith comes out in 2005 and makes $848.8 million in the box office, which is still a lot of money. overall, and the reason why we're doing this episode even at all is because there's an overall mixed reaction to the trilogy by critics and fans. I think as the years have gone by and we get more and more background information, like the novels, like the two Clone Wars series that we get that fill in some of the plot points that Lucas didn't get to tell and left out, I think it has people coming around to appreciating the trilogy more, at least in my opinion.
In my completely experience.
Just completely, you know, anecdotal, and it's different for every fan, because I know people who religiously hate these movies, and we're going to talk about the bad parts in it and our but why those, but I'm also going to get in there, and I'm going to defend on my hill why I still go back and rewatch these movies every year, and why I really don't think they're as bad as people will say they are. So we'll just jump right into it, so we can have a nice, lengthy discussion about it. So we'll start with the bad, just because I think that there's more hate than there is love for the prequel. So we'll start there, and then we'll wrap up with some good stuff. So first and foremost, I think the biggest problems with the prequels, having just watched them again and have watched them many times over the years, is that they just really, really suffer from poor writing and acting choices. And we'll hit some of the main points from that I think that, you know, critics of the trilogy can agree on, that these are definitely, even myself having liked the prequels, how some of these are kind of are problematic to the story. So I think the first one that jumps out after my rewatch is Anakin and I almost said anime.
There is a couple name for them, but I don't remember what it is.
I kind of like anime because it's like because it's like hits double points. I like that. I'm gonna go with anime. So the Anakin and Padme love plot is kind of weird. Specifically, like, just right away rewatching The Phantom Menace, Anakin is just way too young, and he wasn't supposed to be that young. I was reading, like, up to going through this, that Lucas originally wanted to make him like 14 originally, and he probably should have just kept him 14, to be honest, because like 10 is just way too young, and I don't like it. It's weird. It makes, like, what happens in the rest of the, you know, the series kind of cringy.
What is the actual age difference?
He's 10, and she is, I think, like, 16.
Okay.
If I want to...
Which, like, it's not weird, but it's only not weird when you're already out of being 10.
Yeah, no, I know it's totally weird, and I totally didn't like it, but I was just trying to... I didn't remember what the exact number was.
Yeah, and
6 Twitter, is actually not bad. I actually thought it was worse.
I thought it was worse too, because I mean, like, we're 4, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not that bad, but you have to get out of the being 10 stage for it not to look creepy.
Yeah, I don't know the exact. I don't know the exact ages, because obviously they don't say it in the movie.
Yeah.
She becomes queen at like 14, but I don't think. I think she's been queen for a little bit.
She's been queen for a little while.
I'm pretty sure it's like 16 to like 10 to 12 range, which I think is still creepy considering the age difference there. And it comes off as creepy because Natalie Portman just looks way older than he does.
Oh, gosh. So yeah. Yes.
It comes off as really weird. And that kind of transitions into the Attack of the Clones, which is part of, like, the pacing problem I have with Attack of the Clones, is that their love just happens really fast. Like, he hasn't seen her in 10 years, but by the end of the movie, like, Padme's confessing her love to him. And it's pretty cringy, and there's some pretty, like, don't look at me like that. And he's like, well, why? And then she walks away, and he's looking at the camera really cringily and, like neck beardy. So that stuff's not great. For me, it's, like, the worst part of, like, that love relationship thing. Although I do love the score for when they get married. I think it's beautiful. It's what my wife walked out to. It's beautiful. But it's also just really cringy.
Yeah.
When you go back and, like, you just think about, like, it's been 10 years and this stuff doesn't happen, you know, in a very long period of time. But now they're in love because he cut up some pears and, like, fed it to her.
And then you also know that it's totally based on a love that he had when he was 10. So
yeah, and she's like, and she obviously still felt it, so she loved a 10-year-old, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Like, she remembers the love she had from at 10, so, like, did you not love him as, like, a kid? Like, what's happening
it's
here?
It's kind of weird. Yeah. And I know Kate has specific problems with the plot line in Revenge of the Sith.
Yes.
I kind of don't, because it's not as weird as don't look at me like that. because it makes me feel uncomfortable. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. And then just, like, gives her a side-eye creepily thing that's, like, real. I could feel everything. Or she another scene, like, the very beginning of the movie, when he's like, oh, I think she turned off the cameras in the room. I don't think she liked me looking at her. Or, like, looking yeah. in on her. I was like, you peeping Tom, bro?
Well, like, I think...
what's going on here?
I think my problems in Revenge of the Sith grew when I watched those movies, looking back and seeing all those cringy things leading up to it. And then, like, all, like, because, and then I also think seeing, like, this big control factor that happens in Clone Wars, where you see him having these arguments with Padme, where it becomes very controlling and stuff like that. Like, I think a lot of that leads me to my final opinion of, like, the abuse that's in, Revenge of the Sith that I have a really big problem with, is because in my opinion, I know Adrian has a different opinion on this, and I know a lot of people, specifically on my TL, will have a lot of different opinions of this. Like, I hate the way that Padme is handled in the entirety of Revenge of the Sith, because I think that we lose a lot of her because she's, like, confined to a room and pregnant the entire time, which I don't think you have to be confined to a room when you're pregnant, and a lot of it just is really controlling and abusive, and I can go on for, like, an entire, like, episode on it, but I'm not going to. But I think ultimately it is something that is informed by all the other things that I see out there, because I don't think that that was my initial opinion when I first watched Revenge of the Sith. A lot of it has actually come from a growing appreciation of Padme that I've come to have, specifically from watching stuff like Clone Wars, where she is a bona fide badass.
Yeah, I think a lot of that comes from just, you know, him having to, like, wrap things up real quick. And I think it's one of the big writing problems that I have with Revenge of the Sith.
It's so could any of this happen for him being so cringy because he's basically, like, 11 years old when all this is taking place?
Oh, he's not 11.
It starts when he's 11.
Yeah.
No, yeah, like, all of it stems from him being too old to be in the Jedi Order. Like, that's where, like, all of this stems from, to be honest. Like, there's a reason why they don't have kids that old becoming Jedi. Too much attachment, got taken away from his mom, has mommy issues, so.
Yeah.
Are we talking about her death in this part or not?
I don't know. Well, I mean, technically it is a part of the love plot, which another differing opinion that we have. Like, I actually like the explanation, which is total, like, fan theory explanation for it, that she dies because when he force chokes her, and in order, she's knocked out, but in order for for Palpatine to save Anakin, he had to drain her force to then put it in him, which leads her to dying. Because I don't like the whole death of a broken heart thing. I just don't.
It's by far the worst death I've ever seen in any movie.
Yeah. That, and I think she deserves something else. Like, Padme had such a fighting spirit that it bugs the crap out of me. Which goes back to, like, when I didn't care about it, when I was just in the I hate all these characters mode. Like, I didn't think as critically about these things. But now that I'm like, I actually really love Padme. I think she needs her own book. Like, I'm surprised there's not a Padme book.
Yeah, I mean, I finished watching it literally like 30 minutes ago before we sat down to record. And I tried looking at the lens that you've talked about, because I really hadn't watched it since we had that conversation, you know, a few months ago. And I still don't see it that way. Especially, like, when you're looking at when she's dying and giving birth and then Anakin's becoming Vader. I think it's like a different... I think it just sets the tone of, like, that those scenes are just, you know, she lost basically everything that made her her. Like, she lost the Republic. She lost her seat on the Senate. She lost, you know, as cringy as it is, like, the love of her life, and just watch her choke her out. And then you see Anakin on the other scene, you know, going full into the hate. And that's the only thing that was able to sustain him through that process of becoming Vader, is just, like, his supreme hate for Obi-Wan and everything. So I see it much more as, like, look at these parallels on how these different, how these two people are reacting to it, that situation.
Yeah.
I think Carrie Fisher's mom died from a broken heart.
But see, and I've thought about that because you've brought that to me before, but I think that there's a tighter bond to your children than the person who put the children inside you. So if, like, And that's why I think that happens with Debbie Reynolds and with people that, like, when they lose their kids and go into deep depressions and end up becoming really sick. And if you flip that, yes, Padme lost everything, but she had kids. Like, she was giving birth to kids. Like, I don't want kids, and I'm never going to be a mother, so I can't speak from that. But just, like, hearing how, like, my mom talks, like, the only reason, like, the mothers that I do know make it through, like, really tough stuff is because they do it for their kids. So I just have a hard time, like, why she would place him above her potential children.
A piece of relationship, manipulation, stuff like that, I'd assume. And, like, to be honest, at the end of the day, like, regardless of how badass she is, she had to die anyway.
I know, like, she had to die. I know she had to die.
Like,
which,
She could have died there with Anakin choking her out, and then, like, they save the babies. Like, is that a better death than, you know,
something else? But doesn't Leia reference having memories of her mother?
Yeah, it's a bad plot point. I think that has more to do with her being, like, force sensitive, I think, than, like, it being a major.
But is that retcon to make up for the fact that they killed her? Versus letting her die differently? I mean,
in Bloodline, she still, like, references, like, having memories of her mother. But I think that's just because, like, she's that kind of force sensitive.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Like, because it's come out now, like, isn't that just retconning the fact that that was a plot point that got missed?
Yeah, it's probably just a plot point that got missed, to be honest. Because there's quite a few of them, which is why, like, the Clone Wars and different novels had to, like, make up for those points. So I think it's just a missed plot point, to be honest.
Yeah.
In my head, just, like, from reading the Bloodline book, I think that was just, like, in my head, I have that as just her being Force-sensitive and, you know, being able... She's a strong, feeling Force-sensitive person. That's why she's able to feel, you know, Luke at the end of the Empire Strikes Back and things like that.
Yeah.
Without really knowing that she's Force-sensitive. But who knows? That's what happens when you rush movies, I guess.
Do you have theories? Send them to us.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So, moving on from that, we also have, in terms of, like, writing and character development, I've seen a lot of people say some of our great podcast friends don't like Anakin as a whole as a character, being that he's not compelling enough as the focus, basically the main focus of the three movies. I don't really see it that way. I think, like, his fall to being Vader is very methodical through three movies. But, like, regardless, it's still rude and, like, Hayden Christensen's career. Like, when we were watching Revenge of the Sith right now, and my wife, Stefani, was like, whatever happened to him? Like, I was like, who knows? He lives on in GIFs on Twitter, basically, at this point. So, do you have any thoughts on that, Matt, Kate?
No.
I mean, I think... Honestly, like, the Clone Wars makes me appreciate Anakin more, but I still, like, I don't buy a lot of the stuff in, like, progression-wise in the prequel trilogy to make him the character he is. That being said, I think that he does get hate for some actions that I don't think he should get. And I think a lot of that comes from, like, not, like, he is a bad character with bad lines a lot of the time, but I think there are really good plot points that let you show why he has this intense passion and why he can't lock away those emotions like the other Jedi.
For sure.
I think he's like the Nickelback at this point, where they're probably not that good, but I don't know why everybody hates him that much.
That's a great reference.
That is a really good explanation.
We need to put that on a t-shirt. Yes! I'll save my thoughts for...
Get his Nickelback! T-shirt time!
Well, I just didn't think it was that bad. I mean, I don't know. It wasn't obviously that good, but I didn't think it was, like, that bad.
Yeah, I'll save my thoughts for when we go through it. Because during, like, the good portion of our But Why Those, I have a couple points on that of why I do like what Hayden Christensen did and why I believe that turn to the dark side. But I'll save it for when we get there.
Yeah, Nickelback's got a few good songs, too. I mean...
Like, I think overall, I think one of my big distastes for Anakin comes from, like... It's the fact that he knows, like... He knows that he's the chosen one, so he acts a certain way. And, like, this, like, dude bro-y aspect of him that just makes me angry.
Yeah, it's blunt. Like, honestly, like, I mean, character-wise, I really don't think any of it, like, is his fault. Like, it's the Jedi Order's fault for, one, taking him, two, not freeing his mother when they definitely could have, and then three, like, believing that he's the chosen one and just letting him get away with all this antics he gets away with.
Yeah.
Because there's, like, there's a discussion between some of the masters in the Order, and they're like, well, isn't he the chosen one? Or she's like, oh, I'm worried about Anakin. Like, well, isn't he the chosen one? Blah, 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 blah. So they kind of, like, just let him do whatever he wants, even though they're worried about it.
And his haircuts were just really bad throughout the entire movie.
Hey, that was totally 2000s style haircuts.
Yeah, that was
totally... Ewan McGregor had better hair than he did, though.
True.
Exactly. True.
Except in the first movie.
Yeah.
Because he's still, like, on that Padawan haircut. Yeah.
Yeah.
So moving on from there... And this next point is one that I personally never really saw, basically, until I got on Twitter, like, this past year. But people have a lot of problems with the representation of characters in The Phantom Menace as being, like, highly stereotypical of, you know, cultures in our world today. And again, I'll just reiterate that I don't see these, but I think it's important to talk about just because I know it's an issue with a lot of people. As I'll say, like, as a kid who watched The Phantom Menace, I didn't see any of this. Even watching it now, I really don't see it. I think it's kind of a reach, to be honest. But we'll talk about it to see if you guys, what you guys think about it. So one that I saw is Watto, the guy who basically is the owner of Shmi Skywalker and Anakin Skywalker in The Phantom Menace. People hearken that species to being Jewish because of, like, the big noses and things like that. The Sand People as being Arabs or Middle Eastern people. Jar Jar Binks being a Black Caribbean stereotype. And the Nymodians being Asian stereotypes because they do technology and things like that. And their accents are... supposed to be stereotypical Asian accents. I don't know how y'all feel about this, but
you want me to start?
I mean, I'm gonna write.
I want Matt to start.
I'm gonna write in the middle. And
I think it's a reach, and people just looking for shit. I don't know what the Black Caribbean stereotype. I guess
it's like he is actually portrayed by a black actor, and it's the way he's talking and the way he's like reflecting the Caribbean type thing. But so this is where I have a problem with the Jar Jar Binks. I see it. Like, I see all these things. Watto, not so much. Watto, I really don't see. Like, I've never saw Watto. The really terrible accents on the Nymodians, like, that was apparent to me. Like, that was the first thing that was apparent to me. But when it comes to Jar Jar, I saw it and I agreed with it when I first heard about that. But I have a hard time with that because I feel really bad for the actor who played him, because the actor has actually come out and said a lot that Lucas didn't come and say, do this accent, do this. That was a voice that he had used with the young, with the kids in his life. And he brought that to the character. And so that's one of the things that I have a really hard time kind of getting on board with.
But they see
a stereotype that's been used in different types of media. And so when they see it played out, even if it is an alien, they automatically assume that that is what that person is going for. And I think with a character like Jar Jar, and I'm not defending him, because, like, Jar Jar is just a bad character overall. But, like, when you actually listen to the actor talk, like, Lucas didn't come in and say, I want you to do a Jamaican accent. I want you to do these exaggerated characteristics. That is something the actor who is black chose for himself. And so that's why I think that I don't understand that. But at the same time, I'm not going to tell somebody not to have a reaction to these things.
Yeah, that's about where I stand, too. Like, I can't say, like, oh, well, that's not the reaction you should have. But I just disagree with the reaction itself. Well, mainly because for Watto being Jewish and things like that, he's one person. I don't think he's a representation, or he shouldn't be, like, the representation of, like, that entire species. like that's just like one junk dealer slaver guy.
Yeah.
Because if you see the Tordarians in the Clone Wars, like they're nothing like Watto, like at all. For the Sand People, like if you've played any of like the video games or any, if you've like in basically like if you've done any other media outside of like the movies, like you see that the Sand People like aren't just mindless animals, like they are sentient and have their own societies and things like that. For Jar Jar Binks, we see like you said, like Jar Jar Binks is a bad character. I don't think he's like a stereotype. I think he's just a bad character because yeah. we see the other Gungans who aren't anything like Jar Jar Binks, and we only get like glimpses of the Nemodians in like very very brief scenes.
Yeah.
So.
But those accents are really bad. Like those accents.
Yeah, but I don't know, man. I just don't see it because
Black Caribbean stereotype is what I'm trying to figure out here.
Because they see it as a representation of stereotypes that they've seen attributed to black people and specifically like Jamaican and Caribbean inhabitants reflecting.
Yeah, like the stereotypical like Rastafarian, you know, kind of dumb, you know, always high kind of thing. Yeah.
The way he talks, the slang, the
I see it if that's what people see. But as a kid and as someone who just watches these characters on screen, I'm also kind of with Matt where I'm like, I'm just seeing aliens on screen as characters, not necessarily parallels to what we have in today's society. But again, I can also see why people would feel a certain type of way about that. Yeah. But again, it's not something that I even realized was a thing until, you know, like 6 months ago.
Yeah. And I had heard it before 6 months ago. I think too, like, it's just important to understand, at least from that perspective, like, none of us are Black Caribbean or of Black Caribbean descent or Black or Jewish or Asian or Arab. So like if somebody who is of that feels that that's what's being represented, then I think it's important to have that conversation. But I do kind of like, I take that stance and I recognize that and I don't want to invalidate anybody's feelings in that way.
For sure. Yeah, but and if we're missing something, time, definitely
yeah, like,
hit us on Twitter if we're missing something.
Yeah, like, tell us, explain to us, break it down for us, like, let us know. But I also know, like, specifically just talking about Jar Jar, like, I feel really bad for that actor. Like, same. Really, really bad for that actor. And so that's why I have a hard time making that. And, yeah.
Yeah.
I think the Nemodians are the only ones where I'm like, okay, I totally see what was going on there because I feel like there are multiple people speaking in that accent. That was a creative choice that was made. And I think if you listen to that accent, it's really bad.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll move on from there because I think we can stay on that forever. But I will say that there aren't any Latinx stereotypes going on. So that's why we can't feel that way because there's nothing like us going on to make fun of us for. As we move on, another big point that kind of revolves around the writing and kind of the actor choices, and this can go different ways for different people, but the politics surrounding this trilogy, people either think there's like too much politics going on, and some people like myself think there's too little politics going on and not enough of Palpatine's political maneuvering that's going on kind of like behind the scenes. Big problem that I've seen for people bring up for the trilogy, and something that I have a problem with for one of my issues with it. Also, just in terms of just writing, probably some of like the most memeable lines from the Star Wars universe comes from the prequel trilogies, with cringy lines like the sand conversation, which I disagree with. I don't think it's a bad line. I actually like that line.
Say it for us.
The line? No, I'm not going to. At me on Twitter, I'll defend the line there. I just don't think it's a bad line. I think it's a, like, he just grew up on sand. Of course a dude hates sand. Like, sand represents everything that guy hates. From the point of view, the Jedi are evil. I rewatch it again, and it's just a badly misplaced line in such an epic battle and fight. Now this is pod racing, is super memeable. Basically anything Jar Jar says at all can come across as very cringy and bad. And I don't think this has anything to do with the actors themselves. I just think those are just bad lines in general that you could have gotten anyone to read those lines and it still would have come off as pretty bad.
I do have a question. When it comes to, like, the lines and stuff, because we talked about Hayden's career was being just completely tanked by the prequel trilogy, why is Natalie, like, why does Natalie survive? Because Natalie Portman had, like, this is her launching point, and she has, like, a giant career, and same with Ewan McGregor.
I think they're just better actors, so they're able to get across cringy lines better. Yeah. I think that's really all, like, it comes down to. I mean, because Hayden Christensen does have, like, a movie after this, and it just doesn't do well. I think Natalie Portman just is prettier than Hayden Christensen and has more draw, I think. And Ewan McGregor's just Ewan McGregor. Like,
he has that hair. Man.
Like, how can you hate on Ewan McGregor? Another big problem for the prequel trilogy is the pacing is really, really rough in some places. And this is, like, directorial. Sorry, remember NyQuil, DayQuil head. The pacing is just really rough, and I think it's really, really felt in The Phantom Menace because it just feels long because you stay in one place for so long. Like the events on Tatooine seem to drag on really, really bad. And that's, like, outside of, like, the pod racing scene, but it just feels like it goes on for a very, very, very long time. When I think they could have sped up a little bit and kind of broken it up with some other stuff going on around the galaxy. Rewatching Attack of the Clones, it jumps back and forth between all the plot points it has going on, and it really messes up the pacing, I think. And when you get to the Battle of Geonosis, it feels really rushed because you were balancing the anime love sequences with, you know, political maneuvering along with Obi-Wan, like, trying to find out who's the bounty hunter who tried to kill Padme at the beginning of the movie. So it just jumps back way too much, and it really messes up the pacing to make the Battle of Geonosis feel like how it should feel.
There are too many, like, badly placed screen wipes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say next. Like, there's too many screen wipes in, and as much as I love screen wipes, like, it's a, you know, pinnacle of Star Wars storytelling. It just happens way too often in Attack of the Clones. And having just rewatched Revenge of the Sith, I really don't feel like the pacing. I think they got the pacing down a lot more in that one compared to the other two. But I can see, like, how people would say that some of the storylines kind of might be too jumbled in that one. But I think that one has the best pacing out of all three of these movies. But I can definitely feel the problems in The Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones. Another big point that's a knock against the prequels, which I kind of see as a good thing and a bad thing, is that there's too much CGI. Mainly that, like, the color scheme that they use doesn't match the original trilogy. It's very, very bright. There's not a whole bunch of practical sets going on. There are some practical sets, having gone back and, like, looked at, like, the behind-the-scenes stuff, but not nearly as much that we get in the original trilogy. I think a lot of this stems from just Lucas just being so, like, oh, I have the money to spend all this money on CGI. So everyone gets CGI, and everyone... even Yoda gets redone as CGI because the practical sets that they use doesn't fit the models of the CGI that they're using in the movie. And because of this, some of the fight scenes don't age very well, to be honest. Like, particularly, like, a lot of the stuff in The Phantom Menace doesn't age very well. Attack of the Clones, some of the stuff in Revenge of the Sith doesn't age very well either. And that's just because it's so heavily CGI'd and we've just come such a long way with, like, motion capture and things like that. Like, there is, at the end of Revenge of the Sith, see, there's a CGI Tarkin in there, and that CGI Tarkin looks nothing like the CGI Tarkin that we get in Rogue One. So, I know that's a big knock. Do you have any thoughts on that, on the CGI of it?
Do you wanna go?
No.
Cool.
One of the things that I've loved about Star Wars is I love the practical effects. In the original trilogy. Because to me, it made those creatures and those different, like, species seem real. And, like, that is something that I do remember the first time I went back and watched, where I was like, none of this feels like a world I could step into. I mean, like, the Wampa was obviously not, you know, not real, but like the cantina scene and even the in Jabba's palace and stuff, like, all of those scenes feel real. And I think that that's one of the things that gets me and has always gotten me about the prequel trilogy, is that none of those feel like I can walk into that set and feel everything. And that was one of the things that I was really worried about when they did the sequel trilogy. Like, this, that was what I was scared about, was that they were going to do too much. Granted, we now live in a world with mocap, and that's not really a problem anymore.
Yeah. So my last kind of like bad thing that I'll have for the prequels is that a lot of people feel that the prequel trilogy is marketed too much to kids. And this is something that I can definitely see in The Phantom Menace. I honestly think, like, choices like this that Lucas made kind of dates back to Return of the Jedi, where he went with Ewoks instead of Wookiees for, one, for cost reasons, of course, but also to make it a little more family-friendly. Like, it's kind of hard to imagine Wookiees. I mean, not hard for me to imagine. Like, I would love Wookiees ripping apart Stormtroopers, but he went with Ewoks instead, just because it was cheaper and cuter to market, I guess. And then The Phantom Menace really suffers from this. I think it has, like, I'm pretty sure it has, like, a PG rating compared to the other ones that have, like, PG-13 ratings, because some of the Attack of the Clone stuff is a little heavy, and Revenge of the Sith is super heavy. Like, Anakin's chopping up kids in that movie. So I can see this critique for some of the prequel trilogy, but I can't see it for all of it.
Which, I will say this, out of everything, that scene still, like, kind of makes me really, really sad. Because the youngling just walks up to him like, Master Anakin, what do we do?
Yeah, and he just gets chopped up.
It just, like, that, get out of here. That makes me so sad.
Yeah, and, you know, and this critique here, I'll full-fledged admit that, like, when I watched these, I was a kid. So these movies were marketed to me when I was a kid. Like, the pod racing scene, I still like that scene because it was cool and stuff was flying around, and, like, that's what they did it for. You know, that's a made for kids thing right there. And even growing up, like, as a kid, I didn't have any problems with Jar Jar Binks cracking jokes. Like, I thought they were cute and quippy. But then I got older and I was like, all right, come on, Jar Jar. Let's be real.
The way they marketed him was really weird. He had that really weird, like, lollipop thing where, like, his face opened and it was his tongue.
Hey, I had one of his cup topper things that they were giving out. I love that thing. It's one of my favorites. Anything that you think that we left out for the bad before we move on to some of the good?
Oh, no, I was going to say, yeah, The Phantom Menace definitely, I thought, was very kid-friendly. I didn't like it when the first time I saw it. I thought it was very cheesy. And then about the same with the other ones.
What would be your one, like, main bad for, like, the... Like, from this?
From what? My main bad?
Yeah, like, what bad would you say, like, stands out the most to you? Or, like, why, like, would you choose to watch these over the other ones? Or, like, what's the worst note that they hit for you?
The entire Phantom Menace movie? I didn't think Attack of the Clones was actually really as bad as what people said it was, honestly. I actually enjoyed the battle. I guess I could see some of the coloring, cause especially the color scheme definitely makes it weird when you try to watch them all together, but it throws me off considering the timeline. And Revenge of the Sith is kind of is pretty good, and I didn't have a problem. And definitely a lot more, I guess, violent or, like, upper level. But The Phantom Menace, just the whole thing seems like literally a Disney movie.
Hey!
Basically, you said the whole, it just feels like nothing happens, and they just sit there on Tatooine for the entire movie, and I don't really care about the pod racing. And then they made the stupid pod racing games, which made it even worse.
Yeah. No, I think the only bad, I don't know if I would add it just so much as, like, I think the marketing of this was really weird, and that should be a bad, because there's this one, like, I think it's promoting the DVDs to buy, and it's Yoda, and it's Yoda is it was like Yoda man, like the man, but using Yoda, and it was really freaking weird. And friend of the podcast, Suar Saleh, sent it to me one day.
But saying all that, by the way, the worst thing of this entire thing is Padme's death. I cannot stand that. And I didn't really get to say much about it, but it's still the worst death in like any movie I've seen.
Why do you think it's the worst?
I just don't understand why she dies. Valid. Like, she just literally was supposed to be, like, queen, and then she dies because I have a broken heart or something. I saw the technology they have. They can make a lightsaber, but she dies that way and you can't save her. Yeah.
What's your...
I was just saying, I mean, the droid does say that, like, we don't know why we're losing her, so they tried. My biggest problem is, I think, just like the lack of the political scheming. Having read some of the expanded universe stuff, like there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes that I think would have translated really well. Like if we would have gotten like a flashback to like the Darth Plagueis, you know, Sidious taking out his master, or like Plagueis basically like starting the Clone Wars way, way back in the day. I think that stuff would have been kind of cool to see. Because you can see that there's a lot there. Like, you can see that the Galactic Republic is a huge entity in this universe, and we really don't get enough of it. And I think it's a big knock against the prequel trilogy for me.
Yeah. And I think mine is just being, I think I just said, but, like, I don't know. I think there should be more politics, but then I don't want more politics because the politics we have are badly written. So it's like, I want more. It's too real. But, like...
Yeah. All right, so for that, we'll move on to some of the
good. All right, now that we hit an hour, let's move to
the good. I'll cut a lot of it out.
So we'll move into some of the good stuff. So like I said before, I think some of the CGI that happens in the prequels is good, in my opinion. I think the advances in CGI give us a Star Wars that's like much grander prior to the Empire taking over and putting the galaxy into like basically disarray and kind of like this almost like dystopian version of the universe. So some things that I personally think are improved with CGI are definitely the lightsaber battles that happen, specifically like the Duel of Fates, which I think if anyone who hates the Phantom Menace has to agree that the Duel of Fates is a great fight scene where Darth Maul should have won. The duel on Mustafar with Anakin and Obi-Wan. Jango Fett versus Obi-Wan in Attack of the Clones, where we actually get to see kind of like a Mandalorian in action and not just get thrown into a Sarlacc pit. Windu versus Sidious. Sidious versus Yoda. Like, I can go on and on. There's no lightsaber battle that I didn't like in the Attack of the Clones or in the prequel trilogy. So,
which actually, I think the only battle that I don't think holds up is like the Yoda battle with Dooku. I think that's the only one that is kind of hard to watch now. But I think every other battle that is done with people over CGI, like, I'll rewatch it now, and it is still fine for me, and it's still really good.
Yeah. Like, Yoda fight still holds up for me, just because I remember, like, as a kid, just, like, marking out when Yoda, like, throws down his cane. And I don't think I'll never have a problem with it just because of, like, how epic, like, that scene is in the terms of, like, the ethos of Star Wars, watching Yoda just jump around and stuff. Other things I think that are improved are battle sequences, specifically the Battle of Geonosis, the Battle of, like, Kashyyyk. The opening scene of Revenge of the Sith is one of my favorites in all of Star Wars. Not only, you know, when they get into the capital ship, but just the fighting that happens leading up to that with, like, the buzz droids and things like that. You couldn't do that. I mean, I guess you probably could now, but, like... you know, early 90s or early 2000s, like, that's probably only doable with the CGI technology. With the CGI as well, you're able to kind of world build a little bit better, and I love world building. I mean, this is a huge, expansive universe, and I don't think in the... Maybe like, even into the sequel trilogy, like, we don't see enough of, like, the different worlds, different ships, the different species, and we kind of get that a little bit more in the prequel trilogy than we do in any of the other trilogies. So, for example, like, the Senate Chamber is enormous, and that kind of tells you how big this world is, and, you know, reason why we need more politics in it. I mean, there's, you know, thousands and thousands of those chairs in there. So, like, who are these people? Like, where can we learn more about them? Planets that we've never seen before, like completely water planets like Kamino, bug planets like Geonosis. We get to see, you know, the Wookiee homeworld of Kashyyyk, Coruscant, the city planet, things like that. The ships that they're able to kind of show us are a lot better in the prequel trilogy. So we kind of see the transition of the Republic capital ships basically like as pre-Star Destroyers, right? Which I personally think is super, super cool. The execution of Order 66 with CGI is so good.
Yeah.
Because we get to see all the different planets, all the different ways the Jedi were like helping out in this war. And CGI kind of brings all that stuff to life. And I personally like the pod racing scene with CGI, personally. On 5.5 or 5.1 audio on a 120-inch projector screen in your living room, it's pretty good.
I just think it's too long. I like it a lot.
Yeah, that would be my only knock, that it's a little too long. Hey, man, they have to do 3 laps. You ever play the game? It's a long map.
Yeah.
Any points on CGI, Matt, before we move on?
I'm just not that big of a CGI person like you guys are critique-wise as you guys. It doesn't bother me as much. I mean, as long as they're not CGIing corn or sand, I guess, in this case. Like, to me, I notice very, very bad CGI, but as far as everything else, it's kind of like eating pizza. I know when it's very bad, but as far as like great pizza, you can see it's great, but everything else is just kind of in the middle.
And you still eat it because it's pizza.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. It has to be very, very terrible not to eat it, and then you'll know when it's really, really good. But everything else, you're just like, yeah, I eat it. It's good.
Yeah, and they're just judging by going off of, like, Revenge of the Sith, which is obviously, like, the height of their ability to do CGI during that trilogy. I really don't think any of it really ages too poorly. I think the stuff that ages kind of bad is some of, like, the scenes with the clone troopers, where it's, like, a whole bunch of them. Like, that stuff is, that kind of stuff is, like, noticeably, like, all right, like, this is not a movie made in 2017, but like Matt, like you were saying, Matt, like, it, none of it really jumps out to me as being, like, this is unwatchable. This is from, like, you know, the Dark Ages kind of CGI, so.
Yeah, I think the worst the worst of it is when he realizes that this is the tool he has at his disposal, and he's going to throw all of it at you, and then by Revenge of the Sith, it's like, okay, I've used these things. I can kind of tone it down a little bit more.
Yeah, I completely agree there. So next good that I would mention is that great character acting can definitely make up for bad writing that we see. And you can see this in Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan, some parts of Samuel Jackson as Mace Windu, Sir Christopher Lee as Count Dooku, Ian McDiarmid as Palpatine, even a little bit of Qui-Gon Jinn with, Liam Neeson. Like, those characters are great because of the great actors, and it's some of it's over, like, they over are, like, they overcome that bad acting. Some of them do have cringy lines, but other parts, like, I just, having just watched that last battle with, in that Mustafar scene, like, Ewan McGregor acts the hell out of feeling heartbroken in that scene.
Which is also why I don't know why they're casting an Obi. You have your Obi-Wan.
Yeah, I don't need anyone else's Obi-Wan, because we've seen him old and we've seen him young, and he's able to do it just fine.
And now Ewan McGregor is the right age to play missing years arc.
Yeah, let's do it. And to be honest, like, even for Hayden Christensen himself, like, there are some scenes in the prequel trilogy which I don't think get enough credit. Like, for example, like, the amount of, like, pain he does when he's doing his recount of, like, slaughtering the Sand People Village, I think, is amazing. Like, I think it's really, really good and comes across as really well. Is like, he genuinely hates Sand People, like, a lot. And he was crushed, like, holding his mother in his arms. A smaller scene that I think is, like, too real. Like, I don't think when the unexpected pregnancies come up in movies and stuff, it's always like a happy joy moment. But like, Anakin's face when he first finds out is like, oh shit. What? And you can like in his facial acting in that scene, like, you can see him being like, oh, I want to freak out, but I can see that she's happy. Wait, okay, let me be happy now. and still be worried a little bit too. I think it's super, super underrated, just to name a couple scenes that I think show how great, I don't want to say great, but like how good an actor Hayden Christensen is and doesn't deserve nearly as much hate as he gets for the movies.
I know we're still talking about the good, but I'm trying to think of like the, because I don't actually think Padme, like Natalie Portman has a whole bunch of like things that make me go like, The reason why, I realized why it's creepy, because she still calls him Annie. And so yeah. She's taking that 10-year-old name into adulthood, and that's what makes it weird. But
dang,
also,
just imagine when they're doing it.
Oh my god, no. You can't see me, listeners, but I'm cringing. Also, though, I will say the worst line to me isn't sand. It's where she goes, "You're breaking my heart." I hate that part. I hate that part so much.
I'm only beautiful because I'm so in love with you is a much worse part than that part.
I just hate her, like, her voice acting in that scene. But yes, that is also very, very bad.
So, does she have any shining moments?
Yeah, I didn't put her in my list of great acting because I don't think she has a lot of parts that...
What's I'm saying?
She's neutral.
What's what I'm saying? She apparently didn't get her career killed. Apparently she blew up from these movies, but I don't really recall her having anything like
stand out.
Wow.
Yeah. I think Padme is a good of this just in attack. I think Padme is the reason I love Attack of the Clones so much in that battle scene, cuz like while the guys are freaking out, she's like working her way out of her handcuffs.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah.
I can see that. Yeah, I don't think she has like anything that really jumps out. I mean, I think her big thing is like right after this, or maybe right before. I think right after, where she does like V for Vendetta. I think that's much more of her jumping off point.
It's right.
But
after.
I think this kind of like got her foot in the door, and like V for Vendetta kind of shot her.
Yeah.
Shot her onto the scene, I think.
Yeah. But her acting in that was like incredible, and what they asked her to do is incredible. So I think you obviously know she didn't shoot herself by these movies.
Yeah, I think she did just enough, you know what I mean? Like, just enough for her to get by to kind of do other stuff. I mean, not to, like, reiterate the point, but Ewan McGregor and Ian McDermott are probably, like, the best actors in this trilogy. And you can really see it with basically everything. Like, if you go ask anyone who hates the prequel trilogy, two things that they're probably going to say they liked about it are probably Palpatine and Ewan McGregor. As Obi-Wan inside of it.
Hell yeah, with purple lightsaber. Which I love the story behind that.
Because Samuel Jackson
wanted to stand out, so he requested a purple lightsaber, and that just makes me really happy, and I'm really sad he dies.
Hey, they have not confirmed that he is dead. He can come back some way.
Falling.
I don't know. He's probably still falling, yeah. So...
By the way, that was the saddest out of all the movies parts for me, for some reason, out of all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a great scene in general. It's, one of my favorite scenes from the prequels. One, because you see Palpatine just totally wreck a bunch of Jedi Masters. And then you see Mace Windu kind of hold his own. And then, you know, Palpatine kind of like let him win to see, you know, to unfold the plot and things like that. So, great scene all around between all the actors in that scene, I think.
All the kids dying? No problem. Samuel L. Jackson getting thrown out the window? I was sad.
Same.
Priorities. Same.
So, moving on from there, so, I think one of the biggest things that the prequel trilogy does, like, whether it's good or bad, we do see some of, like, the unanswered questions in the original trilogy more or less kind of gone through in the prequel trilogy. So, you know, why are there no Jedi in the original trilogy? Like, why does no one believe that their Jedi was even a thing in some of the in the sequel trilogy now? That's because, like, Anakin killed a bunch of kids in Revenge of the Sith. And all the other Jedi are in hiding because of Order 66. You know, why? How did the Empire take power? You know, how does something as grand as the Republic fall in such a manner, like, in, like, a span of, like, 10 to 15 years? Because Palpatine's a mastermind genius who probably is Donald Trump in, like, and it's scary. And it's, like, And the biggest one, obviously, is, you know, how does Vader become Vader? And you get that basically through all three movies. And without the prequel trilogy, we'd probably still be asking that question. And we would still probably be having to rely on fan theories in... Or not fan theories, but like author theories in the expanded universe that really have no continuity, like we talked about in our books episode. So this gives us some canon references that can't be denied, I don't think. Another big one, and y'all might at me on Twitter for this, but I think John Williams kills it much harder in the prequel trilogy than he does in the original trilogy. I think the original trilogy has like the main scores, but the scenes that, like, the when Anakin is talking to Palpatine about the story of Darth Plagueis, when the Order 66 is going on, like, there are some scores in these prequel trilogies that are just phenomenal, like Duel of Fates, that I think are, I would say, more recognizable and more important to, like, the tone of the movie than we get in the original trilogy.
I will say this, like, the only theme, because, like, I love John Williams and I recognize Star Wars music when I hear it, but I think the one, other than Leia's theme, and, you know, the opening crawl and the Imperial March, which those are the things that stick and they're used throughout, it's Duel of Fates. It's so intense and so good. Like, I don't think there is any, like, in memorability, it's up there with those, but in quality, I think it's above those three. I don't think the entire score of the prequel trilogies is better, but I do think that that section actually shines above anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, it's just, for me, I think it's better just because the songs that you mentioned are kind of like big, you know, the beginning of the movie, the end of the movie, and like, except for like Leia's theme is like the different one, like the Imperial March, like those are like big grand scenes that kind of happen. I think the prequel trilogy is enhanced because of the score throughout it. Like, without that score, I don't think it would be even passable as like a good movie, because music, you know, is just as important as like the writing is. But John Williams just adds that little bit of extra stuff to some of those scenes that people might have a problem with. But if you have a problem with it, you can't deny that that score in the background is pretty dope. Matt, you have any thoughts on that?
Agreed.
Hey, now it's a fact. And my kind of like last but why though for the prequel trilogy, for better or worse, the prequel trilogy just gives us more Star Wars, and I'm never going to be mad at more Star Wars. So because of like the prequel trilogy, we get the Clone Wars animated series, both the 2003 one and obviously the canon 2008 series, which is like one of the best animated series of all time, I think. I think the 2003 version of the Clone Wars in like the Samurai Jack kind of style is severely underrated, and if you haven't seen it, go watch it. And that spawns off of basically George Lucas just leaving a lot of plot holes that no one really had answers to, so they kind of went back and did this. So for better or worse of like the Attack of the Clones into the Revenge of the Sith, we still get really great, you know, a seven season series of the 2008 Clone Wars series, which I know Kate, myself, and Matt all love very dearly.
Yeah, and I think too, like, I'm kind of realizing that retcon is Star Wars' best friend for more content.
You are completely right, because that, like, the whole reason, obviously other than money, like, Disney wants their money, but I think one of the biggest reasons why we also get a sequel trilogy is that fans who hated the prequels want a better finish to their trilogy of Star Wars. And, yeah, you know, if it's bad, like, people want it enough because they hated the prequel trilogy. But guess what? Your hate got us another trilogy, regardless if you like the movies or not. Another thing we get that I'm a personal big fan of is more novelizations and more comics. You know, specifically, not to, like, go through an exhaustive list, but, you know, Dark Disciple with Asajj Ventress, Darth Plagueis, which is a story about a non-canon story now about Palpatine's master and himself, Darth Plagueis and how, like, they kind of set up everything to happen in The Phantom Menace and the subsequent movies in the prequel trilogy. And Ahsoka, which is kind of like, kind of a reach, I think. But, I mean, we only get Ahsoka, that novel, because of the Clone Wars, which happens because of the prequels. So I'm going to throw that in there.
I feel like you put that just because Asajj and Ahsoka are my two favorite characters in, like, the history of, like, almost anything.
Yeah, and they're just really good books that I really enjoy, too. And there's a whole bunch of comics, but I just wanted to stick with some of the stuff that's, like, more or less canon. And we also get really great games based on, not based on specifically, but that has the prequel stuff in it. So Battlefront, the early 2000s Battlefront, not this newest Battlefront. The storyline in that goes through the prequel trilogy. Republic Commando, which is a first-person shooter that puts you in the shoes of a commando unit during the Clone Wars. And I know Matt was not happy with this one, but Star Wars Episode One Racer. I enjoyed that game on the 64. I loved it. I thought it was great.
It was great for that one race, and then it was too long.
hey, Matt. Now we're pod racing now, yeah. In that game. Regardless of, like, if you hated it, it gave you more Star Wars, and you can't be mad at more Star Wars. I don't think, at least not yet. I think as long as we are, as to kind of like wrap up, as long as you're aware of the faults of these movies, you can still say that you enjoy them. I think blatant just love for them, I think, is a big, big stretch. Like, you have to admit that there are things wrong with the series that you love, and then hope they're improved, which I think they are improved in the sequel trilogy. I think a lot of things that people didn't like in the prequel trilogy are fixed in this new sequel trilogy. Things like character, you know, writing, lines, practical effects mixed with their CGI, things like that. I don't want to ramble too much because our listeners are here for a while, but that's just kind of how I feel. I like the movies. I'll rewatch them every year. I don't care. As long as you're giving me Star Wars movies, I'm going to rewatch this, and I take it just as important as anything else in the series because it's there. It's canon. You can't denounce it. It's a thing.
I'm kind of in the same place at the beginning of the episode where I am at the end of this episode. Like, I still don't like them as a whole for a lot of reasons, but I appreciate what they did. And I think for me, like, that ability to say, I'm not a huge fan of the prequels, but I can appreciate everything that came out of them. I think that's something that also needs to come from the side of the aisle that's like, burn, prequels, burn. You also have to say, like, you can say these things have terrible writing. These things have, issues with showing abuse and cringy ass lines and love stories. But at the end of the day, you still have to be able to say, like, this gave us some really great things to this universe that we wouldn't have had otherwise. And I was actually really surprised that Padme doesn't have her own book. Like, what the hell? So, yeah. Somebody go write that now.
When you die like that, you don't deserve your own book. After talking about the prequel trilogy, I still have no difference. I'm indifferent, I guess, at all. I think they're cool to watch if I see one. If I don't ever see him again, I think I'll be okay as well. I don't really have... I could see some of the problems they had, but besides The Phantom Menace, I don't think the other two are really that bad of movies. Yeah. Especially for, like I said, as much hate as apparently they do take, which I still think is just more of a fan-based problem than an actual movie per se problem.
Yeah, I actually really agree with that comment.
Yeah, I do. I do too. Stop, like, gatekeeping hate for Star Wars. Like, the prequel trilogy is, like, you know, to judge if you're a Star Wars fan or not. Like,
yeah,
if people like him, they like him. If people hate him, they hate him. But, like, you shouldn't have to preface the fact that you like Attack of the Clones over the other two movies.
Yeah, you know what I mean? You're right. Like, I shouldn't. Like, and I, we just, like, we have a shirt for it too up on our T plug and stuff. It's like, there are only two rules in fandom, and it's that you love things and you're not a dick. That's it. And I think a lot of the times, like, it is a form of gatekeeping within the Star Wars fandom to say, oh, well, you like the prequels, so you're not a fan. And I actually think that that was a very, like, ageist gatekeeping thing, where a lot of, like, the old or closer to original Star Wars fans were like, they were with me and Pokemon, stop touching my things. And so then that turned into this large thing that then evolved into this big decisive battle between the prequels and the original trilogy, when it's like, they're all there. Just love them, like them, and don't make them a prerequisite to either letting somebody in the fandom or letting them not in the fandom. Like, that's not cool.
Yeah, I agree. Like, you can't, as someone who likes them, I can't argue that there are bad, cringy lines. And if you hate the prequel trilogy, you can't deny that the Duel of Fates is a great score. Exactly. You can't deny that that whole fight scene is amazing. Like, there's things that you have to admit that you like about this trilogy as a whole. And just not being so angry about it. Like, it'll be okay. We have a new trilogy that's much better than basically anything we've gotten so far. So, just relax, guys. It'll
Unless
be okay.
Your favorite one, and you are a diehard Phantom Menace fan, I can't see it either.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, you can cut this out, but our poll between was like 40-something votes, and still Phantom Menace was zero
actually,
in the favorite one.
We shouldn't cut that out. That is actually really interesting. So Adrian put a poll up asking for your favorite Star Wars, your favorite prequels movie. Zero people voted for the Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
It was in the 50s the last time I saw it, and it was at zero.
Yeah, it's... Oh, we have... Out of 42 votes, 2% for The Phantom Menace, 24% for Attack of the Clones.
No, that's the other
67%
one.
67% for Revenge of the Sith.
Is that the one you like or dislike?
That one that you enjoy.
Oh, okay. And what was The Phantom Menace then?
2%.
Oh, 2%. So it got a vote.
Yeah. And then for what prequel movie do you dislike? 24% for The Phantom Menace, 34% for Attack of the Clones, 21%... for Revenge of the Sith, and 21% for it as a whole trilogy out of 29 votes.
Which is actually more of an interesting number than the actual other poll. The fact that not liking is so dispersed upon, but obviously we know when it comes to liking, we do not like The Phantom Menace, but yet we do not apparently like it or hate it worse than the other movies.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
Yeah, I mean, for my own personal vote, I went Phantom Menace for... dislike, and then Revenge of the Sith for enjoy the most. So
yeah,
that shows you where I'm at.
I went Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones.
Cool. Well, that's all I got. Stay tuned for the original trilogy, which will probably be a lot less decisive. Unless
you're talking about the word is divisive, guys. Both of you keep saying decisive.
I have not said anything.
No, you said decisive in the beginning.
When?
When we first said it, when you said that, you said when you first brought up the fact that it's the fandom that's decisive, not the movies.
I thought I said divisive.
It. No, everybody keeps.
First
saying
of all,
decisive.
I'm sick, so leave me alone. You're supposed to be nice to me.
That's so weird.
But yeah, okay. So, as always, you can find us at ButWhyThoughPC on Instagram, Twitter, and on Facebook.com/ButWhyThoughPC. And remember, send us your questions for us. They can be anything. They can be pop culture related. They could be, hey, why did you name your dog this? How many? Do you like cats or dogs? Matt, is your hair real? Anything. Just ask us questions.
Did you question my hair?
I did.
I have beautiful hair.
Is it real?
Is the most gorgeous, luxurious hair out of all of us.
As always, you can find me at OhMyMythRandier on Instagram and Twitter. Adrian?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at SuperReuse93, SuperReuise93. If you had any problems with any of my love for the prequels and you want to talk about it on Twitter, like our good friend Tim, who's been a guest on our show before, did not like that I said that the prequels are better than Batman v Superman. So this is a conversation we're going to have over Twitter. So let me know.
I think he's just doing that on purpose.
He wants to warm himself up by that garbage fire.
Yes.
And Matt, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at datm18, D-A-T-T-M-1-8.
And bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.